Welcome to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Good morning to all of you joining us locally by radio and streaming online. Today is Sunday, October 2nd, 2016. Thank you for tuning in this morning. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu. I'll introduce our guest in just a moment, but first I want to share the sad news with you all that a member of our atheist community, locally based author, blogger, and all-around powerhouse, Nikki Massey, passed away unexpectedly yesterday. Nikki was a fierce advocate for many humanist causes, including disability, reproductive rights, poverty, racial awareness, and feminism. Nikki blogged at The Orbit and was a guest on this show. We lost a brave, strong woman yesterday. Please keep her and us, her friends and family, in your thoughts. All right, back to it. Today's show is about birth, rebirth, and deconversion. It's about dark places and bright relief. Michael Vito Tosto is the author of the recently published book, Portrait of an Infidel, the acerbic account of how a passionate Christian became an ardent atheist. He blogs at his website, The Infidel of St. Louis. Michael Vito Tosto joins us by phone today. During this live show, I invite you to call in or to write to us with your thoughts and comments. You can reach us at 952-946-6205, or you can email us at radio@minnesotaatheist.org. Maybe some of you, what you hear will ring true with your experience. Maybe you want to talk about your deconversion process. We're here to have a conversation today, and you are welcome to join in. Michael, thank you so much for joining me on Atheist Talk.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, so I want to talk about your book, Portrait of an Infidel. And the thing that I found interesting about this book was it is a collection of arguments against Christianity. We've seen that book before. That book's been published. But I think what makes this one different is the openness with which you discuss your religious upbringing, your experience with casually sliding into, you know, casual disregard for Christianity, and then having an experience of being born again and then deconverting. So you've run the whole gamut for religious experience in Christianity.
Oh, yes.
And you split that up between your personal stories and the arguments with God. So it creates this nice timeline of the things that you were thinking along with the more academic discourse going on in between. So I want you, if you would, please, to explain the difference. You call out different types of Christians, and I think it'll be a nice way to start with a common terminology. When you have the term Christian A and Christian B, and then later on you talk about Christian Z and Christian D.
Yes.
So give us an overview of what all those terms are.
Yeah, and Brianna, I wanted to add that it wasn't my intention to necessarily create labels for anyone, but just in the context of trying to understand the psychology behind what makes a Christian a Christian. So my thing was Christian A, I thought, okay, well, here we have people that are born into a Christian nation, born into a Christian family, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing anything that's decidedly theist or Christian with their lives. So just like a person might be born German or they might be born into a Democratic family or a Republican family, Christian A is just that person who is born into Christianity and has the title by birth, but maybe does not necessarily do anything that is, you know, decidedly religious or spiritual or you know, theist in nature.
And what was the term you used for a Christ-Easter, the Christmas Easter Christian?
Oh, the Cheester Christian,
yes.
a Christian that yeah, the person that goes to church for Christmas and Easter because, you know, that's kind of like what you're supposed to do. That's what Christian A does. He's a Cheester Christian. He just kind of shows up, or he or she just kind of shows up, and, you know, it's just part of the routine, the way they might belong to a country club.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what's Christian B?
Okay, well, Christian B is that person who, and not everybody in Christian A makes this transition. Christian B is that person who has caught fire, and Christianity has taken hold of them, and they're running with it. And they may be coming from Christian A, or they may be coming from complete non-belief, you know, no background with Christianity at all. But the B stands for born again, and that was just my way of sort of, you know, just trying to delineate the difference. But Christian B is that Christian that is on fire and decidedly Christian things, is about church, is about prayer, is about worship, you know, and evangelism, and goes to Bible studies and is trying to create other little converts.
And Like I mentioned earlier, these things do come in kind of chronological order in the book. So Christian Z comes much later in the book. But why don't you give us a rundown of what Christian Z is?
Well, and this is where I ran into some opposition when I was, you know, when I've talked about these things previously. But Christian Z, I use the Z for zombie. And what I mean there, I refer to a process called Christian zombification. And what I mean by that is that as a person is living out their Christian life and reading the Bible and being discipled and mentored, and they're changing. They're becoming something other than what they were at the beginning. And Christianity tells you that that's a good thing, that you're becoming, that you're gaining life and you're becoming more like God. My experience, and I believe this to be the truth, is that what's actually going on is that you're losing yourself. You're still alive, but you've lost who you are, who you originally were. And in that sense, you're like a zombie. You're like a walking dead person. And that's how it was for me. So Christian Z is that person who has been living out their life as a Christian and in the process has begun to lose themselves in the mesh of their religion. And I think that that's a bad thing.
And you talk a little bit about how it's the cooling of the fires. You know, when you come in, you're all excited, and now you're just kind of doing it by rote muscle memory. And then Christian D.
Yes. Well, Christian D, the D stands for disillusioned. And again, you know, not everyone makes this leap, but a lot of times when you're going through that process I called Christian zombification, you're presented with things where you are given choice. I can either stay with the program and deny what I know is right in my head, you know, when it comes to things like homosexuality or women not being able to talk in the church, you know, very archaic things that the Bible preaches. Christian Z is encountering these things, and it has a choice. Do I want to go on with this, or do I want to start moving away from this because I know in my heart that this is wrong? So Christian D is that person who is disillusioned and discouraged and basically turned off to his religion and is beginning to move toward a point where deconversion might be possible for them.
All right. Thank you. So those are we'll come back and revisit all of those as we go through the show. But it's nice to start out with an understanding. It's kind of a sneak preview. So you were raised in a Baptist home, correct?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. And you describe one of the things that really stuck with me was your description of what it was like being raised with the iconography, with Jesus on the cross, about being told that you were born flawed, and the realization that I think it was there was a part in the book where you said, I was the reason the crucifix in the hallway existed. The realization you had when Jesus didn't just die for you, but because of you. Can you talk about that?
Oh, absolutely. Well, there was a crucifix that hung in the hall of my parents' house. I was fascinated by the figure of Jesus on that crucifix. You know, he was twisted and in pain, and yet we're holding this symbol up is something to venerate. And even from the time I was a little boy, I was fascinated by that, because it seemed so bizarre. And when I asked my parents about it, I was told that Jesus died on the cross because of my sins. Because I was – they didn't say it this way, of course, but what being communicated was that I was born wrong. I was born flawed. I was born displeasing. And because of that, that guy on the cross is there. That it was because of me and others like me, obviously. And so just think about that as a little person, a little boy or a little girl growing up thinking that I'm the cause of the death of the guy that my family is worshiping. He died because of me. That's what my parents are telling me. And just try to picture the psychological harm that does to a young child, even if the child isn't really aware of it at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, you talked about you made an analogy between, like, imagine telling that to a kid of yours, like your son or daughter, that, you know, he or she is bad because, you know, and you don't find them pleasing, like where you put yourself as the God figure and the child as your child is the child. And it was really moving to read that, like, oh, that's even more awful than it already sounds.
Because it's abuse, isn't it? I mean,
right,
you term that as abuse?
That would be abuse, yeah. Psychological abuse.
Yeah, psychological abuse. You are displeasing to me, but, you know, it's okay for God to say that to us. Well, see, that's one of the things I took issue with.
Mm-hmm. So to cut it down, because you go into great detail about this, but just to cut it down for time, your parents had a divorce, and your mother became a very different person, and you stopped going to church. So you had been indoctrinated in this church in your early life, but then going through your teens and your early, your late teens, you kind of lost your religion, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it was just... go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I would still say that I was what I called Christian at that time. Yes, I did lose my religion, but it wasn't anything that I was worried about or concerned about or even really noticed to any great degree.
Just kind of faded into the background.
Yes.
Okay. Let's talk more about this, about your journey through religion when we come back from the break. We do have to take a short break, listeners, if you'll stick with us. This is Atheist Talk. I'm with Michael Vito Tosto, and you're listening to AM 950, KTNF, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Podcast fans, did you know that StandUpRecords.com has live comedy CDs of some of your favorite podcast personalities? Folks like Jackie Cation of The Dork Forest, Robert Kelly of You Know What Do, the Sklar Brothers from Sklarbro Country, Doug Stanhope from Doug Stanhope's Podcast, and Mark Maron from WTF. You've heard them for free. Why not consider spending some money to find out what they do for a living? Just head on over to StandUpRecords.com or look for Stand Up Records at Amazon.com or the iTunes Music Store. That's StandUpRecords.com.
We humans arrive on our planet knowing nothing. In our first 2 years, we learn how to clothe and feed ourselves, as well as the basics of communication. Humanists know that knowledge of our world is derived by observation, experimentation, and rational analysis. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems. Find our meetup group, meeting topics, book clubs, newsletters, and other activities at our website, humanistsofmn.org. Like us on Facebook or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours and ours alone.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe, and I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and Francine Dinah. If you've never been to Cucumbers, it's a buffet-style restaurant with a huge variety of salads, homemade soups, bakery items, and hot entrees that change daily and nightly. Plus, our always fresh fruit and delicious ice cream. We're open for lunch and dinner, but Sunday brunch is my favorite time at Cucumbers. With scrambled eggs, waffles, French toast, bacon, sausage, baked ham, chicken fajitas, brunch potatoes, warm gooey cinnamon rolls, and many other items to choose from, it's no wonder why Cucumbers has always been a popular Sunday destination. So whether you're looking to skip Mass, someplace to go after Mass, or just great food to maintain your Mass, Cucumbers is the answer to your prayers. Bring in your church bulletin or Minnesota Atheist newsletter and receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
There are those that say that the recent severe storms are God's judgment. There are those that say humans are causing climate change. Humanists know that knowledge of our world comes from observation, experimentation, and rational analysis, not from reading horoscopes or old writings. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems by meeting times and locations and more at humanistofmn.org. Like us at Facebook, too, or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours and ours alone.
Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu. I'm speaking with Michael Vito Tosto, author of the book Portrait of an Infidel, The Acerbic Account of How a Passionate Christian Became an Ardent Atheist. We are taking questions and comments for Michael on the topic of today's show. Please give us a call at 952-946-6205 or email us at radio@mnatheist.org. All right, Michael. So we are now in your in your late teens, and you met a girl, didn't you?
I did.
So
and I loved her.
Yes, and you loved her very, very much. And she was an evangelical Christian, you reveal, although that was not really the first thing you noticed about her, right?
Nope.
Okay.
Oh no, no. It was beautiful, and I loved her. You know, it was your high school romance, but it went beyond that for me. I really wanted to spend my life with this person, and I did everything I could, everything in my power, to make that happen.
And it didn't work out, and she ended up going to another state. She moved out of state, and it was really, really hard for you from what I was reading in the book.
Yes.
But her parting gift to you came in handy, for that moment of your life.
Yeah, she bought her parting gift to me was a Bible, which upon receiving I unceremoniously tossed into the back seat.
Right.
But once she was gone and I was in pain, I retrieved it simply because she had given it to me and it made me feel close to her, and I started to read it.
And this was one of my favorite chapters when I got to this. This is the first of my favorite chapters in the book. You describe the Bible as a magic eight ball. So let's talk about what you mean when you're talking about the random flip probability.
Well, here you have a book that is chock full of statements that are tailor-made to speak to you, to convey wisdom or comfort or whatever is needed in your particular situation. Here you have a book that is filled with everything that you're wanting to hear anyway. And so when you open up the book to any particular page, I call it the random flip probability, what are the chances that you're going to find something that speaks to your situation? The chances are very, very high, because that's what the book is designed to do. To then backpedal and say that that was the voice of God is what I feel to be special pleading.
But what happens when you get to, if you flip randomly to one of the Begats or one of the, like, bears ripping children to shreds?
Oh, yeah. Well, wouldn't that be something if I had flipped to that and be like, whoa, why did she give me this? Yeah, no, it would have, yeah. I mean, there are things in there that are questionable. But for the most part, it is a book that is meant for comfort and guidance and wisdom.
So tell us a little bit about the process. So you're in a lot of pain. You pick up the Bible. Tell us how this led to you becoming a born-again evangelical Christian.
Well, I was reading through the Psalms, and I noticed that whoever wrote those knew a thing or two about the suffering that I was feeling just then. And so I was intrigued, and I came across certain rhetoric that did, well, exactly what it was supposed to do. It spoke to me. It made me feel better. And as I was examining the Bible, I saw a prayer at the end, at the back of the Bible, on how to become a Christian, how to be saved. And I was feeling good. I liked the book that was in my hand, so I prayed that prayer. And that's kind of how it began.
But that doesn't make you an evangelical. So how did you get there?
Well, a few days later, a friend of mine, we were in my car, and he saw the Bible, and we started talking about it, and he said that he went to a church that was right up the street, that was a fun place, and he thought it would be cool if we went there together, and we did. And almost from the moment I walked in the door, it was like I found myself. I found a place where my pain made sense to me is really what was going on there.
Sure.
But I found a place that, you know, I could launch myself into. I could forget about myself for a while, and I got caught up in it, and it did what it was supposed to do. It changed me.
So, I mean, there was, and for the whole story, you should check out Michael's book, but there was a whole series of events that turned pain into joy, and you just say that the pain didn't, it wasn't like it just magically went away, you know, it receded over time as you were able to replace that with Christianity. You even wrote a book that you described it as something you thought would help people keep the message of Jesus, even if they didn't want anything to do with conventional Christianity. Is that a published book? Like, can I go find that on Amazon right now?
Oh yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's called Joshuanism, and I've sort of distanced myself from it, but I mean, it's an interesting read. Yeah.
So what did your life look like as an evangelical?
Oh, I mean, on the surface, I was becoming a better person. I was you know, being conformed to what the Bible said I should be, becoming more conscious of others around me, which on its own is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was losing myself. I was losing anything that made me, the unique person that I am. I was putting those aside, and I was taking up things that wouldn't have been me had I not gone through this process of being in pain and finding hope in this segment here known as Christianity. So I was changing on the surface, which looked like for the good, but on the inside, I feel I was changing for the worse.
So this is, you're now entering your Christian Z part of your faith.
Yeah, and that's a slow, subtle thing too. That's years of reading the Bible and being, you know, preached to and going to Bible studies and reorienting your life around your beliefs and your faith. And that's a slow process, but I believe it's a bad process. I believe it's a slow death is what that is.
Okay, and we've got about a minute and a half here before we have to go to break, but let's start talking about what led to your deconversion, which was, again, a very long process.
Oh, yes. I mean, it was a private unraveling over the course of many years, but I had questions, and I would bring these questions to the people that, you know, were supposed to answer them, and all I ever got was, don't worry about it, you don't need to understand it, just accept it by faith. And this was not satisfactory. This was the shutting of a door rather than the opening of a door into more understanding. And I didn't like that. I felt like I had a right to understand what I was believing, or else how could I talk about it competently? And that's kind of how it started.
One of the things that struck me is you said a major point of your disillusionment came from a discussion with your wife when she asked you why you believed what you believed. And this had a major impact on you. But this can't have been the first time that you were asked this. So what was it about that time that really struck with you?
Well, she said, why did I believe Jesus rose from the dead? And the answer that came to my mind was because that was what I was taught. And I realized instantly that that was a horrible answer.
Sure.
And I was vexed by that, you know?
Uh-huh. And I'm so sorry. I gave you a big question right at our break time. So we have to go to break.
Yes,
but let's come back to that when we come back from break, okay? All right, listeners, thank you so much for being here with us. We are going to take a break. Stay with us. We'll return to Atheist Talk with my guest, Michael Vito Tosto. I'm Brianne Bilyeu, and you're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Art lovers, it is time to celebrate, learn about, and collect local art at the St. Paul Art Crawl, running October 14, 15, and 16. Over this weekend, you'll have the chance to explore a wide variety of art while touring through local artist studios, lofts, and galleries. Hosting over 350 artists, up for purchase will be paintings, photography, pottery, sculpture, jewelry, and more. The Art Crawl sprawls over 23 locations. Join the Art Crawl and discover outstanding art for you to own. When you buy local art, you're providing to artists so that they may continue to create the art we love. Special thanks goes to the St. Paul Federal Credit Union, the official sponsor of the St. Paul Art Crawl. For more information on the wonderful events and how to find great parking at the Falls Art Crawl, be sure to go to stpaulartcrawl.org. That's stpaulartcrawl.org.
We humans arrive on our planet knowing nothing. In our first 2 years, we learn how to clothe and feed ourselves, as well as the basics of communication. Humanists know that knowledge of our world is derived by observation, experimentation, and rational analysis. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems. Find our meetup group, meeting topics, book clubs, newsletters, and other activities at our website, humanistsofmn.org. Like us on Facebook or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours and ours alone.
Atheists, secular humanists, and free thinkers, here you are listening to the Minnesota Atheists Talk Radio Show, Atheist Talk. We hope you are enjoying it. If having a frankly atheist perspective on the radio waves appeals to you, please consider making a contribution to our radio fund. Our contract came up for renewal, and we need your help if you want the program to stay on the air. That will make sure that you can continue to have opportunities to hear interesting speakers with non-religious perspectives, and you can call up and ask them questions too. Get the details on our website at minnesotaatheists.org, where you will find buttons to make it easy to make a secure donation through PayPal. Or, if you have a business and would like to reach an intelligent, progressive audience, please contact us through our website. That's minnesotaatheists.org. Or call us at 612-588-7031. If you are interested in us, we are interested in you.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Peter Lee. Mostly sunny on Sunday, highs in the mid-70s, northeast winds around 5 miles an hour. Clear tonight with lows in the lower 50s, a mostly sunny Monday with highs in the lower 70s, and increasing clouds on Monday night. The EatLocalMinnesota.com restaurant of the week is Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club. Located by Moore Lake, Crooner's is one of the most beautiful destination fine dining restaurants in the Twin Cities. Happy hour food and drink specials and a Sunday brunch, 6161 Highway 65. More information at EatLocalMinnesota.com.
Thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu. Before we turn to our guest, Michael Vito Tosto, we have just a few announcements. First, thank you to member Brent Michael Davids for composing the music that we use here on Atheist Talk. This radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous donations of listeners. Any donation, great or small, helps keep Atheist Talk on the air and in podcast. Minnesota Atheist is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. If you're able to help with a donation, please consider doing so at our radio fund page. We couldn't do this show without you, and we deeply appreciate your support. Atheist Talk is produced with funding from the Minnesota Atheist, Humanists of Minnesota, American Atheist, and Cucumbers Restaurant in Edina, Minnesota. Please consider visiting our sponsors, and if you do, let them know that you appreciate their support of Atheist Talk. If you'd like to advertise in this program, please contact us at radio@mnatheist.org. Today is our monthly Atheist Talk radio brunch. If you're local, come on over to Cucumbers Restaurant in Edina at around 10:30, and you can share in some wholesome, heathenish companionship and conversation, and some pretty darn good food. You can check out our calendar of events on our website and on meetup.com. That's about it. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to Michael Vito Tosto. Michael, we do have a question. Are you okay if we take that for a second here?
Let's do it.
All right. So we have Laura from Eagan. Laura, thanks for calling into Atheist Talk.
Hi. Thank you for the show. I want to connect this to Trump. I mean, I'm amazed at here's a guy who's in a porn film, third marriage, talks about women the way he does, did not pay $916 million of taxes, caused all this bankruptcy. I mean, in any rational world, this is substantially immoral or unethical behavior, and yet he seems to maintain the support of evangelicals. Do you understand that?
And really quick, just so our listeners and so Laura and Michael are aware, we are a nonpartisan, Minnesota Atheists is a nonpartisan organization, and we do try to avoid politics to some extent here. So let's just be aware of that when we go forward with the answer, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't quite hear her question.
So can you sum that up again, Laura?
Yeah, I wonder if there's some type of moral disconnect. And we can put it in a non-political realm for that, but how do there seems to be in the evangelical community some type of disconnect between reality, how we would measure ethical choices, and clearly in voting behavior, but somehow that doesn't seem to be connecting, that there is almost a blind spot, if you will.
Yeah. I think the answer is in humanism. I feel like just as religion without love becomes an unhealthy situation, so too does non-theism without the touch of humanism. So for me, I think that humanism is the answer to that. Because if we spread these values and these ideals that are found under the umbrella of humanism, I think people are going to be well-educated enough to make those kinds of decisions.
And we do have
I don't think they're going to have that disconnect.
Sure, yeah, and I think you're right about that connection, because we do hear about plenty of evangelical Christians who do not fall under the conservative umbrella. And those are the ones who have probably, you know, embraced the more humanist concepts, as we would define them.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for calling, Laura. All right, so, Michael, let's go back to your journey here.
Okay.
You had... We were just starting to talk about your deconversion. So
Give
us – this is a shorter segment. We've only got about maybe 8 minutes total. So there's so much more in the book that I want to talk about. So give us the short version of your deconversion.
Well, my wife challenged me by asking me why I believed what I believed. And I didn't have a good answer, so I decided to research it. So I launched myself into an investigation where I tried to make myself as impartial as I could, and I started studying the historicity of Jesus and Christianity. I started studying the validity of the Bible. I started looking at the resurrection. I looked at the camps of the believers and the camps of the non-believers and took in what everybody was saying, and I weighed the evidence, and my investigations led me to conclude, and I have to add that this is not what I wanted to conclude. But I had to conclude that I had no good reason for believing what I believe. That the answer to my wife's question was, I don't know, there is no good reason. And once I was honest with myself about that, I mean, the way forward was clear. No matter how painful it was going to be, the way forward was clear, because I became a man. Through that investigation, I became a man who follows the evidence.
And I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, but the book is not only your story, but it's kind of a recorded, it's an accounting of all the research that was done. So we've got two parts of this book. We've got your personal journey, and then we've got the research that you did. So a good portion of the book talks about, for listeners who are looking for arguments against God or against Christianity, you've addressed all sorts of things, the Christian message, problems with free will, the problem of evil, argument from design, and then you've just got a bunch. You address Pascal's wager, argument from morality, ontological argument, all sorts of things. So for readers who want more information about that, you can get that with the side of personal story, which helps to make it more interesting, because it's, you know, I personally find personal stories a little bit more engaging than the dry academic side of it. But you managed to merge both of those and blend them pretty well.
Well, that was my goal, to do that.
One of the things that I wanted to – there was a selection that I chose here that really struck me. It's not new, but it's just written really well. And I was wondering if you might mind if I read a portion from your book.
Please do.
Okay. Christianity voids any significance that would otherwise be attributed to a human life. It reduces all of the good you've done and all of the bad that you've done to, well, nothing. All of the good you've done won't matter if you don't have Jesus. All of the bad you've done won't matter if you do have Jesus. In either case, what you do doesn't matter. The entire scope of our lives, how we lived, who we loved, the dreams we had, the decisions we made, the places we lived, the trips we took, the friends we met, the lessons we learned, the hauntingly beautiful, endless stream of ongoing personal discoveries and introspective epiphanies is stripped down to what we did with one basic choice. Did we believe or didn't we? So, Michael, that was awesome. That one's going to stick with me for a while because it's so much of what the Christian message is. It's if you believed, then you're saved. If you didn't believe, you're going to hell. And even for those Christian sects that don't believe in hell, it's still if you believe, then everything's great. And if you don't, then everything's bad. And it's just too simplistic when you start to examine it.
Oh, yes. I feel that that aspect of the message isn't discussed enough, Brianne.
Let's talk about your coming out as an atheist. So another part of your book, you say, coming to believe that Christianity is unfounded and untrue does not necessarily lead one to invariably adopt a stance of atheism. So how did you get to atheism? Because it wasn't just facts.
No, What it was during my investigations about Christianity, but I was coming to learn about reason and logic and rationality, things that I was foreign to, things that in my segment of Christianity I was kept away from. I was discouraged from embracing those. So as I took those up and I learned about logic and I learned about reason, it became clear to me that atheism, while not answering every question, because nothing does, atheism floated to the surface as the best possible stance that I could find that addressed everything in the most responsible way.
So how do you think that you escaped? A lot of people go through a journey where they're not quite willing to let go of supernatural belief. They try out, you know, Buddhism, paganism, different things like that. You went straight from, I mean, you cut supernatural belief cold turkey.
Yeah, I guess when you say it like that, I guess I did. I hadn't thought about that previously, but you know, you're right. I think there again, it's simply because I got tuned in to logic and reason, and I want to say my eyes were opened to the supernatural realm is a great thing to discuss, but there's no tangible evidence. There's nothing to quantify. And I just realized that I didn't want anything to do with that because it's a question mark. And I wanted my life to be resting on periods, not question marks.
So we've got about 3 minutes left. You have a chapter called The Wall of Hate, which is a chronicling of the extremely bad time that you had after you publicly came out as an atheist.
Oh yeah.
So let's just agree to say that it was a horrible time. You got a lot of really negative feedback. How did you reconcile and make peace with that?
Well, at first I was very angry because I wanted people to. I figured they would disagree with me, but I thought they would love me enough to accept that. Well, he's doing what he has to do. But it took me a long time to work through those negative emotions and make peace. But I had to eventually come to the place where I had to understand the human condition of people being afraid of that which they don't understand or that which threatens them or that which challenges their worldview. They get afraid and they lash out. And once I understood that was just human nature doing what it does, I found it easier to forgive because I to an extent understood where they were coming from. But it was very hard. I had a lot of anger. And, it took me a long time to work through it and to make peace, but I did. And I think a lot of that is because I did have positive people in my life, my wife and a few other people that knew what I was doing and that did come alongside me and help me.
Would you have done it differently, your coming out?
I've asked myself that because what I did was I posted it on Facebook. and from there, the barrage just came. I don't think so because if I can't post on Facebook what's going on in my life, then why am I friends with these people?
Sure. Would you have any advice for people who might be in a similar situation who are trying to decide how to let people know that they are deconverting?
Yeah, I mean, and the sad thing is that I want to go both ways. I want to tell them, you know what, just make your stand and go with it. And then I also want to say, well, you know, be careful and take your time, because I mean, I don't want what happened to me to happen to them. But whatever it is in life, I think we have to be true to ourselves, and that's the most important thing. So if they feel the need to put it out there, I would recommend that they do that and stand by their choice and weather the storm. But, you know, if their approach is to be more, you know, careful, that works too. But I found for me, and this is just me, but I found that just being true to myself and making a stand is the most healthy way forward.
Okay. Michael, thank you. That's all the time we have today. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Sorry I gabbed so much. Thank you.
No, it's great. We love it. Thank you. Goodbye. Thank you, listeners, for tuning into Atheist Talk, and make sure to stick around through the commercial break for this week's segment of American Atheist Viewpoints, produced by American Atheists and bringing you thoughts and voices from atheist communities. This next segment is pre-recorded. Thanks again for listening to this week's interview with Michael Vito Tosto. His book, Portrait of an Infidel, The Acerbic Account of How a Passionate Christian Became an Ardent Atheist, is available on Amazon for purchase. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to bringing you a new show next Sunday.
The Neil Larson Financial Hour airs every weekend, bringing you the latest updates in retirement financial issues. Hi, this is Neil Larson. I have more than 40 years' experience, and each week I offer informed financial tips and strategies to ensure you make safe investments. For more personalized advice to maintain a stable income after retirement, contact me at 952-303-3232.
The Neil Larson Financial Hour, Saturdays at noon with a replay Sundays at 7 a.m., only on AM 950.
Make the connection. I'm Lori Fitz, host of Connections Radio Show, talking about ideas that matter. Join me and my guests as we reflect on a wide range of topics that challenge us to see ourselves, our community, and the world around us in ways that get us thinking, connected, and perhaps inspired or challenged to do just a bit more because we made the connection. Be a part of our conversation. Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe. I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and France in Edina. Many who have dined at Cucumbers are of the opinion that our buffet has evolved from an older, more country-style buffet. They look at our 50-foot salad bar and can imagine a smaller ancestor with far fewer choices. An ancestor that didn't offer as many hot selections or have a bakery with fresh baked muffins and breads. Didn't offer homemade soups and lacked the fresh fruit and ice cream bar that Cucumbers customers have grown to love. But some will say, where are the transitional buffets? In addition, they look at everything that we offer and say that Cucumbers is irreducibly complex. If you were to move just one of our offerings, the entire buffet wouldn't function. Well, I would like to think that Cucumbers was intelligently designed, since I helped design it. But at the same time, it truly is an evolutionary step up the buffet ladder. And as always, if you bring in your atheist newsletter or church bulletin, you will receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
I've never met another atheist.
Sure you have. Non-believers make up 12% of the population.
Then where are they?
You can meet us at book clubs, pub crawls, discussion groups, movie nights, monthly meetings.
Okay, I get it. How am I going to keep track of all this?
Easy. Sign up for Minnesota Atheist Meetup Group and subscribe to AWE.
What's a meetup group?
Meetup is an online networking site that helps people build communities. We have over 700 members with at least two events every week.
And what is AWE?
It stands for Atheist Weekly Email. It comes out every Friday and lists everything that's going on.
How do I sign up?
Go to the Minnesota Atheists website, minnesotaatheists.org. On the left, click on the words Get Awe-Inspired.
And for the meetup?
Look for the red meetup badge on the right. Above it are the words Click Here to check out the meetup group.
I'm sold. Minnesota Atheists, Meetup, and AWE. What's that website again?
MinnesotaAtheists.org.
Hello, and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, October 2nd, 2016. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and I'm joined this week, as always, by David Silverman, President of American Atheists. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Nick. Great to be here again.
Yeah, thank you everyone for joining us, and thank you as always for listening. Let's talk about Trump. Let's talk about a rally that he had. This was on Wednesday, I believe. Might have been Thursday.
We could have a podcast every week and say and start it with, "Hey, let's talk about Trump."
I think we probably could get there. So let's just listen to what Donald had to say.
But you know, we have our Christian conservatives for Trump today, and they're in the room. Let's go. That's what we want. That's beautiful. See that? In fact, they put this. You see that? Right here, Christian conservatives. Raise your hand, Christian conservatives, everybody. Raise your hand if you're not a Christian conservative. I want to see this, right? There's a couple people. That's all right. I think we'll keep them, right? Should we keep them in the room? Yes? I think so.
So what do you think about that, Dave?
Well, it's very reminiscent of Pink Floyd, The Wall. I can't see that video without hearing, you know, get him up against the wall. There's one in the spotlight. He don't look right to me. Get him up against the wall. Are there any atheists in the theater tonight? But really, when you look at this, you're looking at an in-group and an out-group. You're looking at a man who is trying to be part of the in-group of an evangelical Christian organization. And, yeah, he's kind of joking about, you know, should we let the non-Christians stay? He's kind of joking about that. But you know what? If you're in that room and you're one of the few non-Christian conservatives and he's like, all right, well, you can stay, that's not a welcoming thing. That's not a happy thing. And if you're watching it and you're not a Christian conservative, you're going to know that, you know, it's not exactly – a welcoming place for you, at least that's my impression.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I mean, if you're watching this and you know, you can hear the level of applause for are there any Christian conservatives in the room, and the room goes wild, and then should we let the non-Christian conservatives stay in the room? Slightly less applause there, I would say.
Well, it's so dismissive too. I mean, he actually puts his hand out in the video. He puts his hand out and tells them to kind of shush them. And there's like three people in the room. I mean, if you're not a Christian conservative, what are you doing?
Right. And, you know, the interesting thing to me about this is, you know, like you said, he's clearly, you know, joking, and I'm doing air quotes here. He's clearly, kind of kidding around, or, you know, kind of using language in that way. But the issue here is, or the thing that's more interesting to me, I think, is the pandering. The idea that he's or the tone that he takes when he's pandering to Christian evangelicals, when he's trying to kind of loop them in and, as you said, be a part of that in-group. It is interesting to note that, you know, Donald Trump is, let's be honest, Donald Trump is not an evangelical Christian. Donald Trump is has not done a whole lot in the realm of the religious conservatives. He was really unpopular during the Value Voter Summit a few years ago when they did the straw poll there. This was last year. I think he came in like fifth or sixth, very, mm-hmm. very near, way down at the bottom. And that's, you know, that's for good reason. I mean, this is a thrice divorced serial adulterer who bragged about his adultery and who in the past has, you know, not really towed the line on these issues. He at one point in his political career, and I'm again, political was in air quotes there, you know, was in favor of abortion, or was in favor of. Or was opposed to criminalizing abortion. He had said that he was in favor of marriage equality. He said that he thought that Kim Davis, the clerk in Kentucky, was not doing the right thing when she refused to sign off on marriage licenses. So he's not come down on the side of the, you know, sort of phony religious liberty arguments that have been made primarily by the religious conservatives over the last couple of years. But somebody in his campaign, or Donald Trump himself, has made the calculation that he needs these religious conservatives in order to win. But what we're seeing is that even with the religious conservatives, even by uniting the evangelical community, it doesn't hold the same power that it once did. I mean, we're not back in 2004 when George W. Bush's campaign ran unapologetically as an evangelical campaign and mobilized religious conservatives, especially anti-LGBT religious conservatives, by putting all those ballot initiatives to amend state constitutions to ban same-sex marriage. That was, you know, they explicitly said that this was about turning out the evangelical vote. Now, that's not the case. I mean, even if you did win evangelicals at the same rates, there's just not as many of them anymore, right?
So let's look at that comparison. If you look at the George W. Bush, the evangelicals gathered behind their guy, and they wanted him to win, so they gathered behind him, and they pushed him, and they made him president. They essentially did that. And in this year, and during the primaries, what we saw was the evangelicals, and specifically Jim Baker Jr., endorsing Trump. Not because he agreed with Trump, but because Trump was winning.
Right.
So in the George W. Bush time, they gathered behind somebody who was losing to make him win. This year, they're gathering behind the only person that's asking for their vote so explicitly. They're gathering behind somebody that they don't agree with at all, and they're doing it in a way just to back a winner. So right. That shows that they don't believe they have a lot of power. And then if you combine that with the fact that Trump is still going to lose, what we're seeing here is that the evangelicals will gather behind anybody who asks for their vote. Well, I'm making a bigger, broader statement here. But they're gathering behind somebody who's not an evangelical just because he's asking for their vote. And they don't have the power to make him win. They don't have the power to put him over the edge or even make him a serious contender right now. So what we're seeing here is a lack of dedication from the Christian conservatives and a lack of power from them as well. So yeah. I'm actually in a pretty good mood about it.
Yeah. And, you know, just one thing to sort of amend or add on here, you know, this is going to be a close election. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons for that. But I think the power of the Christian conservative movement is certainly waning. And I don't think anyone can argue to the contrary. So this is, you know, something to keep an eye on.
And this is something why I'm very happy with the fact that we're involved in CPAC, we're involved in the formation of CPAC in the upcoming years, in the upcoming year. And you know what? The giving of the voice to the atheists in the conservative movement will really highlight the fact that the Christian conservatives in the conservative movement don't have the power that they have, and that the conservative movement needs to embrace the atheists in their midst and support the separation of religion and government so that more atheists can vote that way. And this is what we're trying to accomplish with our efforts down at CPAC.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Thank you for joining us for the American Atheist Viewpoint. For more information about our work or to become a member, please visit www.atheist.org. We actually have a donor match going on right now where if you become a monthly sustaining member, your contribution is going to be matched for the first year, dollar for dollar. It's a really great way to support American Atheists and support the stuff that we're working on. You can learn more about that at atheists.org/monthly. Thank you so much, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, everybody.